Amen. So just a sense of review here. You remember, this was written to the Jewish Christians that came to Christ through faith, right? But we're in a sense getting wrapped up in the legalism, in a sense, or the works of the flesh, you know, the just wanting to go back to that whole thing of I have to do this in order to please God. And remember, nothing pleases God other than our faith. It's hard to think that way, because we were even talking about it last night. You know, it's hard to think about that because we are so conditioned. We're so conditioned that we go out and get a job, we earn the money ourselves and so forth. And we're always earning things. But, you know, the reason why I think that the author of Hebrews, which I have a tendency to think that it's Paul, but I think he's bringing these Jewish Christians back to say it's by faith. I mean, think about all the times we've said by faith, by faith, by faith, you know, very securely by now that these guys walk by faith. That didn't mean that it was perfect faith either. Because sometimes our faith isn't necessarily perfect, you know. We don't always respond the correct way and so forth. But I think that sometimes even when, you know, I was reading this morning in Matthew, I think it's chapter 21, where he's talking about the Pharisees, and he's talking to the Pharisees about his authority and their authority and so forth. And he gives them two examples. One guy was a guy that his master said to do this, and he said, "No, I'm not going to do that." And then a little bit later there, he regrets that he said that, and he goes, does it. And another one says, "I'll do it," and ends up not doing it. And the question was, is which one was more righteous, right? Well, the one that came back and determined that what they did was wrong, and their faith wasn't perfect, right? And they said, you know, I've got my faith in the wrong thing here. And then they went and then they obeyed God, you know, and did the master in that case, and did what he asked them to do. So when we look at all these guys, anywhere from Abraham to Joseph, their faith isn't going to be perfect. So that should give us great encouragement, right? That wow, you mean we can walk by faith? Certainly we can walk by faith, right? And God expects his people to walk by faith. And that's the only thing, really. Faith pleases God, it says in there in verse 6. So, by faith, let's read through these verses. By faith, could you imagine that them two words would be used right at the beginning of that verse? By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. So when we're looking at this, you know, I want to go back to Joshua, because I think, you know, us journeying through, I think it's good to look at where these guys, what these guys did, and just the marvelous work that God did in them. If you would turn to Joshua, we're going to kind of survey this a little bit and read some and not read others, so just stick with me if you can. Joshua is a wonderful book. We went through it a while back, but it's always good to go back to Scripture and see what God has to say. But remember, Joshua was the one that took over the big shoes of Moses. It was not necessarily something that any of us would, it would almost, you know, in modern terms, it would be like me taking over for Pastor Chuck. You know, it would be quite intimidating, right? Quite threatening in a sense. But here Moses has passed away. Joshua has been lifted up to take over and to lead the people of Israel. And there is much encouragement here for Joshua in this first chapter as he tries to fill the shoes there of Moses. And in verse 3 through 6, it says, every place that the sole of your foot, you know, God's talking to him. It says, every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses, from the wilderness and from in this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of Hittites, to the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to to their fathers and to give them. So God here would encourage Joshua that he would be for the territory in which he says here, he says, I, in verse 4 there, it says, shall be your, what's happening here? There's something coming out of something. If you want to listen to that, that's fine with me too, but. Did you just turn it off? Nope, there he goes again. There you go. Oh, is it going upstairs? Oh, okay. Gotcha. That's all right. Yeah, there you go. It was. I felt like I was, you know, Karen was, or Nance was playing the piano yesterday or last week after we all got done, and Jim and I were talking, and she said, "I'm playing some background music for you guys to talk to." Kind of felt like that. Anyways, but God had given Israel this territory, and it was that territory. It wasn't like God said, well, go off and do whatever you want. He gave them specific boundaries there. And he said, I give you this territory. And so, this land that God had was, in a sense, given to Joshua, he had already given this to Israel some 40 years ago. The beginning of Moses' ministry, in a sense, with the people of Israel leading them out of Egypt through the wilderness and so forth, and Joshua's ministry of leading them into the promised land. And so what we see here is that in the 40 years prior to this, that there was this lack of faith, that when God told them to go into the land, what happened? They went into the land, they were scared by the land, the creatures of the land, I would say, the giants in the land, right? They couldn't see past that, so they decided that it was of their best interest not to do that, right? And what did it do? It cost them 40 years in the wilderness, right? So that lack of faith or trust really in God. And here he tells Joshua, be strong and of good courage. Something that the Lord would instill in him. We see that brought up here in this one chapter three different times where the Lord would say, be strong and of good courage. Why? Because Joshua, as well as us, when we step out into faith, we need to be strong and we need to be of good courage, because sometimes it doesn't always make sense to us when God calls us to do something. It requires us to trust Him and to step out in faith in that. So, in the very last portion, well, not the very last portion, but of that stanza of verses there, verse 9, he says, Have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage. That's a tough command. You know, okay, Lord, I'm going to be, how am I going to do that in my own strength? I know I've failed before. I know I've hadn't had enough courage. How do we do that? Well, it's relying upon His strength, right? It's trusting in the Lord's strength rather than ours. So much do we want to be our own man, but in reality, we can't be if we're going to be strong and of good courage. And it says, do not be afraid nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. So he knew that God was with him wherever he went. And that's important, you know, as we, you know, we've got some decisions to make here as a church, you know, and just to, what are we going to do? Where are we going to go? And all this. And, we have to know that God is with us, and he's going to call us into walking by faith, you know, and just to trust him in all that. And so then chapter 2 here, it says, now the son of Nun, I won't make any jokes about that, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. Sounds awfully familiar. But the Acacia Grove there was Shittim, and Joshua would deploy two spies there. That Acacia Grove sits about 10 miles northeast of the, you might also remember back in Numbers chapter 25, I'll just read a couple of verses there. It says, now Israel, this is when Moses had them, right? Then Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So there's this place didn't necessarily have the best memories, I would say. This is where they committed adultery, harlotry, and just make a note of that in your mind, because pretty soon we'll get to the harlot that God uses in Jericho. And we might shake our heads at that, but then God uses a harlot. How is that? You know? And then the spies, if you recall in Numbers chapter 13, what did Moses do? Moses took the one of each tribe, right? One man of each tribe, and he sent him in to check out the land. And they came back. They were all frightened except two guys, Joshua and Caleb. Two guys, two spies. So he sends two spies in there. I don't know if there's any correlation there, but it's kind of interesting, I guess, nonetheless. But he sends two spies. And I think, you know, if you're going to be the leader of Israel, you're going to pick somebody that you feel that you can trust, that you can send into the land that is faithful, right? So these spies were faithful spies that he would send into the land there. And so arrived, of course, there we see in the second half there of verse 1, it says, so they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And so Of course, then it says that the word spread, and the king there understood that these spies of Israel were in the land, and they were around that area anyways, and certainly there was resistance to God from them. They didn't want God in their city. They understood who they represented. They saw the things. Matter of fact, in a couple places within these chapters, it says that their hearts were melted, meaning that they were beside themselves. They really they were very discouraged, right, through it all. It's always amazing when people see God and yet they're not very receptive to Him. And she would take the spies in there and she would hide them within her place there. And then and I want to pick up in verse 8 there, 8 through 13, I want to read. It says, "Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, 'I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Shion and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted." Our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. And therefore I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brother, my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death." So she knew who they were, and she knew, and it says there, they knew, it says, "I know that God has given you this land." So she perceived that. But in verse 11, she said, "Your God is God." You know, He is referring to the God of Israel there. He is in heaven above and earth beneath. He governs it all. He is the God of the heaven and the earth. And then in verse 17, we see that the spies make an oath with her. And it says, "So the men said to her, 'I will be blameless of this oath of yours,'" which, you know, she wanted kindness, right, towards her for hiding. And it says, "So the men said to her, 'We will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless when we come to the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, and your brother, and all your father's house to your own house, so it shall be that whoever goes out of the doors of your house into the street, this blood shall be on your head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell this business of ours, then we will be free from your oath, which you made us swear." And so the agreement here was that she would put this scarlet cord out the window, they would see it, and the whoever was inside would be safe. And it gives you that same picture as when God was going through, and he allowed the destroyer to go through and take the life of the firstborn of those in Egypt. And there would be it says there that they put the blood on the doorposts and the lintel. And of course that really signifies the cross there. You can see it. And so here they say all we need is that string down there, right? And really she had to, in a sense, by faith, she took that string and she hung that out the window. It says in verse 21, then it was almost immediately that she would hang that string out there. Wouldn't you think there would be some questions about that? Why is that string hanging out your window? What are you doing? You know, you said that they weren't here. There's a string that hangs out the window. You know, there'd be some sort of maybe even condemnation from those that are around them of that she's in a sense in bed with the enemy. And so, you know, there's something. She's putting her faith there out, in a sense, out for all to see, including those that would come back and take over the city there, the nation of Israel. It says, according to your words, so be it. And she did it. It was a decision point in her life that she would promote the God of heaven and earth. So in verse, or chapter 3, we see here it says that Joshua rose early in the morning, and he set out from Acacia Grove and came to the Jordan, and he and all the children of Israel and lodged there. I'm sure it wasn't a Holiday Inn or a Sheraton, but he lodged there before they crossed over. So it was after 3 days that the officers went through the camp, and they commanded the people, saying, when you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, and the priests and the Levites bear it, then you shall set out from your place and go after it. You know, this is just a step here of faith for the children of Israel. It goes on, it says, yet there shall be a space between you and it, about 2,000 cubits. So that would be about 3,000 feet or so in our standard. Do not come near it, that you may know the way by which you must go, for you have not passed this way before. It's some place that they've never passed before. They didn't know what was ahead. Do you remember what our definition there of faith is, right? Let me read it so I get it right. Verse 1 of chapter 11 of Hebrews. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. They didn't know what was ahead of them. They hoped for the land in which God had given them, and yet they didn't know exactly what was in store for them. This time, when the spies return, they don't come back with a message of defeat, but a message of, let's go ahead, let's proceed, right? Goes on and says, Joshua said to the people, sanctify yourself, get ready, get yourselves ready, get in order. For tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Then Joshua spoke to the priests, saying, take up us over before the people. So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. And the Lord said to Joshua, this day I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, and they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. You shall command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, saying, when you have come to the edge of the water of the Jordan, you shall stand in the Jordan. So Joshua said to the children of Israel, come here and hear the words of the Lord your God. And Joshua said, by this you shall know that the living God is among you, that he will without fail drive out from before you the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the whatever, you know, all these Zites, you know. Zites and mites and rites. He's going to drive them out. And it says, behold, the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord of all the earth is crossing over before you into the Jordan. Now therefore, take for yourself 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man from every tribe, and make it, and it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan, that the waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, the waters that come down from upstream, and they shall stand as a heap. Now that's a, you know, we can read through that and say, wow, you know, or but that's pretty impressive. No, because in the 15th verse there, it says the Jordan overflowed its banks during the whole time of harvest. It was a time when the river banks overflowed, and it was not necessarily the kindest of paths. You know, some places I read where they thought this spot was probably 100 feet across and probably 10 feet deep. I know from experience you can't just walk across that, or else you will sink and drown. You know. And the whole rushing of the water, you know, this is springtime, and it's the caps are probably melting up on Mount Hermon, and it's coming down through the Galilee and just filling the Jordan to overflowing. And if you've ever been to a river that's just overflowing its banks, it's pretty scary at that point in time, you know. I mean, we've had a lot of rain this summer, and you probably went down and you probably went across the bridge and saw the Shemung just racing, you know, and so forth. And it just, it can be kind of a scary, thing. And here God says, all I want you to do is rest, you know, put your sole of your feet on the water. And it's nothing more than faith, right? That you're going to trust God that He's going to do something miraculously. He's going to push the waters back and heat them up. This is, you know. And again, we can see some resemblance here of what God did in Egypt, bringing them out of Egypt to the wilderness there. This time he was bringing them from the west side of the Jordan, or the east side of the Jordan, to the Promised Land. Pretty neat stuff. Then when we jump over to chapter 4, they've obviously have crossed over the Jordan. They did exactly what the Lord had asked them to do. And just before, they're still standing there within the priests are anyways, the people perhaps have went through, and they're standing there, and they, and the Lord has asked them to make a memorial there. And of course, we gotta be careful with memorials. We have a tendency of taking a memorial, and all of a sudden it serves us as God. We kind of worship it as a God. Sometimes we do that in the church. We build big buildings and we worship. We say that the only time we worship is in them buildings, and what a craziness. Or we design these statues that mean something, I guess, but they really mean nothing to God, right? And really what it was for was so that there, you know, we sang it this morning, go tell your kids, right? The memorial was set up such that they wouldn't forget what God miraculously did for them as he brought them through. And so they would set up these stones of remembrance there. And interesting enough, so when they did this, and in verse 18 of chapter 4, it says that it came to pass, meaning that they did what the Lord asked them to do, the stones of remembrance there, and through the dry land of the Jordan. And it says that it came to pass when the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of God had come from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the feet touched the dry land, that the water of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. So God returned it to the same condition as it was before they crossed. Yet God provided a way. You know, we might have not taken that way. We might have diverted down below the Dead Sea and maybe came around, you know, but God said, no, I want you to go across from the Acacia Grove. I want you to go across to Jericho. And he provided a way through there. Who would have known what would have happened? They might have got stuck out in a wilderness again for 40 years, you know, if they hadn't taken this path. So God gets them across. They're in the land now in chapter 5. And God, remember all the people that were in Moses' time that had disobeyed him, had died, and they hadn't circumcised. So God decided that this was the time. So he would mark his people. He would circumcise him very, in a physical way. Today, God circumcises our hearts in a sense that when we accept the Lord Jesus into our life, he comes in and he circumcises our hearts. He conditions our hearts so that we will be faithful to him. You know, that we will walk with him. He takes out all that garbage, you know, all the sinful. Well, I'll say this: there's still sinful desires, but we have an advocate in Christ that we can go to him and repent, and he will forgive us. He's faithful to do that. But he marks his people, and even today he marks his people. You know, and what's interesting about that, in the final events, right, in the tribulation period, the enemy will mark his people, but God's already got us marked. He already marks us. It says in verse 10 that they started to keep the Passover. They remembered what God had did for them. They kept the Passover there. In verse 10 it says that now the people of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. It says they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very day. And then it says, then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land. And the children of Israel no longer had manna. We forget that lasted all through the wilderness journey up to this point. And then when they went into there, God gave them the provision of the land that he had promised them, that territory. And all of a sudden, their produce was in that land all along. And it says that they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year. And then in verse 13, it says that, Joshua would be confronted by a man. It says, and it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, stood opposite of him with his sword and drawn in his hand. Who does that man remind you of? Reminded me of when Jacob, when he wrestled with that man. And it was none other than the Lord. And it says there that Joshua went to him and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And he said, "No, but as commander of the army of the Lord, I have now come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped. Just giving us a understanding there, and he never calls him back for worshiping. You know, the angel of the Lord would always call someone back, you know, somebody that was an angel appeared, they would always say, "No, don't worship me," you know. But at this time, he fell down and he worshiped him, and there was no, you know, rebuke of that. And then a little bit later there in 15, it says the commander of the army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals. Take your sandals off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy." You know, very similar to when Moses met the Lord at the burning bush, and he said, "This is holy ground." You know. And then we come to Jericho. Maybe this is what you've been waiting for, Jericho. And it says in Jericho there, I'm really going to read through most of this chapter, and we're going to stop here. And again, I tried to figure out where I was going to read and what I was not going to read, and I couldn't figure it out, so we're going to read the whole thing. Ain't going to hurt nobody, is it? So it's now Jericho was securely shut up because the children of Israel, none went out and none came in. They were threatened by him, right? Remember, their hearts melted. And the Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hands, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. Then you shall do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpet. It shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout. Then the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people shall go up, every man straight before him." Can you imagine hearing this? Okay, what do I have to do, Lord? Really? We've got to do this, Lord? Is it really going to work? Never heard of such a thing. That's what was interesting, I think, here is that, see, there's two different stories here, right? There's the story of Moses and him leading them out of Egypt. There's this story of Joshua leading the people into the promised land. And they seem to be similar until we get to this point. And then we find out that their faith. And, you know, Moses and the Israelites got stuck because of the lack of faith. They got stuck in the wilderness. And now God, because of the faith of his people, say, "Hey, I want you to do this. I want you to obey me in this. I want you to do this thing that looks a little weird, but I want you to do it." And they're going to walk by faith, you know. And what's going to happen? Well, there's going to be some neat things that go on, right? They're going to find that the Lord's faithful, right? So then Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the ark of the covenant and let the 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the ark of the Lord." And he said to the people, "Proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the ark of the Lord." So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priests who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the ark, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, "You shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout. Then you shall shout." So he had the ark of the Lord circle the city, going around it. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant was the presence of the Lord for the people of Israel. So it was really, let's take the Lord around this city. Let's take him around seven times, you know. And it's interesting here that it says, "You shall not shout. You shall not make any noise," right, "with your voice. You shall not say a word," right? No, the Lord was going to do this. You had to trust the Lord. I wasn't going to heckle at those that were on the wall of Jericho and say that we were much stronger than they and in all this and how we have all this power and so forth. And no, the Lord says, "I don't want you to say anything. I want you to trust me as we do this thing." And Joshua rose up early, verse 12, in the morning, and the priests took the ark of the Lord. And then seven priests bearing seven trumpets of the ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. So they did 6 days. Our faith needs to be very persistent. You know, when God shows us something, I think we need to, as we're stepping out, we need to kind of stick with it, you know. In our faith. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early about the dawn of the day and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. On that day only, they marched around the city seven times. And the seventh time it happened when the priest blew the trumpet that Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, and she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take the accursed things and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. So stay away from all the stuff that's in this city. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord, and they shall come into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it came, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. And he utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the the country, go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman, all that she has, as you swore to her. And the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brother, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel, but they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's, all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers from Joshua, whom Joshua had sent out to spy out Jericho. And in this, we see a little contrast here. We see a contrast of God's judgment and the salvation of the Lord. All Jericho had heard about the Lord, right? They had, in chapter 2 there, verses 8 through 11, it says that they heard of him, right? It says there, and now before they laid down, she came up to them and said, I know that the Lord has given you this land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, speaking, and all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. We have heard of how the Lord dried up the waters of the Red Sea. So they had heard all this of the Lord. So there's that portion, right? I'll say, the vast majority of the people in Jericho had heard about the Lord, yet they had rejected. Sadly to say, that's really probably true today, even. Especially people in the U.S. They've heard about the Lord, but they've become faint-hearted. They've melted, in a sense. Their hearts melted. And yet they don't get him. And so, but then we see Rahab's response, right? The positive response of her faith in the Lord. He is God of heaven and of earth. And she would follow the directions of the spies, and she would lay out the scarlet cord there, indicating that she was one of the few, right? In that city, she was the place. In that city, that's the place you wanted to live. That's the house that you wanted to be a part of, because she was going to be saved from the destruction of the Lord. And so if we go back to Hebrews chapter 11 there, how did the walls of Jericho come down? It was by faith. It was by faith. It was by letting the Lord do it. By involving Him, right? I've heard people within the Christian community, they kind of get on this roll of this whole Jericho thing, and they start circling cities and all this stuff, and they think the circling of the city was the thing that did it. It wasn't the thing that did it. It was the faith in the Creator, right? It was faith in God that brought down the walls. It had nothing to do with their encirclement, but that was a proof of their obedience and their faith in the Lord. You know, He told them to do that. They did it. And then it says, by faith the harlot did not perish with those that believe. Why is that? Because she believed, right? And the opposite is true. She didn't perish with those that didn't believe because she wasn't in that category of unbelief. Rather, she believed the Lord. Right? She believed the promise that if she would put out that cord, just put out that cord. Meaning that was her, she bought into it, right? She bought into that. It's interesting here is that in this verse it says, when she had received the spies with peace, that word peace is irene. It speaks of harmony between individuals. It speaks of oneness. Right? So she had this peace with these spies. See, that's important because she had, basically it's telling us there that she had the same faith in the same God as these spies did. She had peace with them. It wasn't that she signed the right treaty or she did the right works, but that she trusted in the same God. You see, that she trusted in him. The reason that she was saved was because she believed in God. And she put her trust in him. She had faith in him. So today we have that same appeal, right? That we would put our faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. You can come to this house as many times as you want, and you're always welcome here. But if you never put your faith in the Lord, then
there is no salvation. Right? There is no salvation. You can do all the good works that you want to do. You can give to the poor. You can be very charitable. But the bottom line is that you have to trust the Lord. You have to believe in Him. You have to have a relationship with Christ in order to be saved. Is the Lord coming down for a communion? Are you okay? We're gonna
look at what's interesting. You know what's interesting about Rahab is Matthew's genealogy. It's quite interesting that she begot Boaz and so forth. That really she was a descendant of Christ, you know, and we're like, wait a minute. You know, descendant of Christ. Like I was saying in Matthew 21, it talks about, you know, Jesus brings out the tax collector and the harlot, and everybody shrieks and goes, "Oh no! Now how can them sinners be saved?" You know how harlots are saved? They're saved by faith. You know how tax collectors are saved? They're saved by faith. You know how goody two shoes in this world are saved? They're saved by faith. Putting her trust in the Lord. Believing in Him. Right? Trusting in Him. It doesn't get any simpler than that. And it doesn't get any more complicated than that. It's just, you gotta trust in the Lord.